It's a very nice space here. Big, lots of light, lots of devotees. Nice. The topic for 3 evenings during my visit here to Detroit be a topic that you all selected, or somebody amongst you all selected. The topic is overcoming obstacles on the path of devotional service. So I thought this evening I'd speak about just one part, since it's going to be in 3 parts, so I don't have to speak about the whole thing. And the part that I was thinking to speak about is the internal obstacles, as opposed to something that's out there that's an obstacle, something that's within. I was thinking a nice place to start would be good place to start would be tuning into what's the path of devotional service. The obstacles is something that's standing in the way. But what's the path of devotional service? What's devotional service? What is bhakti? So when you think of, this is a participation question to get you all absorbed in here and not in the noise that's outside. When you think of bhakti, what are some synonyms? Devotion. What are some synonyms?
Loving service.
Anyone else?
Faith.
Taste.
No, faith.
Faith. Sure.
Praising God.
Devotional service. Bhakti.
Loving relationships.
Loving service. Faith.
Surrender. Dedication.
Very good. Devotion, like you're devoted to something, you're dedicated to that something. Sure. Something? No. Okay. Okay. No other without motivation. Exclusive without motivation. Good. Very good. That's Rupa Goswami's definition, by the way. Very good. One of the terms that Bhaktivinoda Thakur uses to equate, like a synonym with devotion, when you do something with devotion, you do with Trishna. Trishna means thirst. Like chanting. You can say chanting with faith and chanting with devotion, chanting with dedication. Bhaktivinoda Thakur uses this expression. He explains that chanting with devotion or service with devotion is where there's thirst. There's a relationship with the person who you're serving, and there's an eagerness, a joy, a happiness, a, Rupa Goswami's language is greed. to be not the material kind of greed, the spiritual kind that says that the intensity of wanting to please the beloved is with intense eagerness, greediness to achieve that shelter of that person. So an obstacle, just like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu describes in Shikshastakam, an obstacle on the path of devotional service, which is our topic, is that we don't have attraction. We can be convinced, and we can explain with conviction why we're convinced, and yet Durdaivam Ahajani Nanuraga. We're so unfortunate. We don't have an attraction for that which we're convinced about. It's a little bit like Arjuna, our position, Arjuna's asking Krishna, what happens if one takes up this yoga process that you're describing and they don't make it? They don't complete it. They gave up the worldly one. They're going for the other worldly one and they don't complete it. What happens? Are they not like a riven cloud with no position in any sphere? Right? At least that was Arjuna's doubt, and Krishna's answer was no. Whatever progress one makes on the path of devotional service or the path to Krishna, that's permanent. Never lost. And that little, even a little of that, will save one from the greatest fear. Svalpam apyasya dharmasya trayate mahato bhayat. Mahabhaya. Greatest fear. Greatest fear is being dragged by the Yamadutas down to the court of Yamaraj, and that means you're going to get a lower life form, a worm or a dog or a spider or who knows what, something lower life form. The path of devotional service is not just to do something. I mean, the intended purpose of bhakti is to achieve Krishna. There was one devotee, his name was Padaseva, Padasevanam. And he, when he read chapter 8 of Bhagavad Gita, he was very happy. Because he expressed, and he said it again and again, and finally he followed what he got excited about. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, if you begin but don't complete, then you go to the heavenly planets and live for a long lifetime of sense enjoyment, and after completing that sense enjoyment, you come back and you continue where you left off. He said, that's my plan. I like that one. I'll do a little sincere devotional service with that promise of Krishna, because I trust that Krishna will keep his promise, and it's my ticket to the heavenly planets. Long. And sense enjoyment. I can't wait. And he left Krishna consciousness. I haven't heard from him in 20 years or something, but that was his idea. The path of devotional service is not... It's a very incomplete picture of the path of devotional service. The path of devotional service is, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur is describing, and is... in various ways, you also said, faith in that goal of reaching Krishna. So obstacles in reaching that goal are, we have our shelter and other things. I'll take three different approaches on those things within that are obstacles. One of them is from Bhaktivinoda Thakur in Harinam Chintamani, where Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes there are the unwanted contaminations of heart that keep us from reaching Krishna, and they're in three categories. Anarthas that arise from the wrong kind of thirst, asat Krishna. We have thirst for the temporary. I want to enjoy. Although the voice may be more subtle, that's the thirst. And when one tries to progress in spiritual life with a thirst for the temporary, you don't get very far. It's an obstacle on the path of devotion. It's an internal obstacle. I'll tell you a little generic story. Maybe you've heard this before. It didn't come from Prabhupada. It came from Purnachandra Swami. But it's appropriate. You can tell the Prabhupada version of something similar. Once upon a time, there was a devotee and a spiritual master. And the devotee was a householder, and he lived in a village, and his spiritual master lived just outside the village. And every day he would go pay his obeisances to his spiritual master and hear from his spiritual master, then go back into the village and do his daily duties. And over a period of time, he started developing a particular question in his mind. And the question was growing and became burning, and so one day he gathered the courage and expressed that question, the doubt, to his spiritual master. The doubt was, why is it that it's so difficult to progress on the path of devotional service? It should be so easy. You've described in so many ways how simple it is, and why? And his spiritual master said, this is a very deep question. Let me contemplate it overnight, come back tomorrow, and I'll give you the answer. So the disciple was delighted. His spiritual master was appreciating a profound question that he had asked. He was thinking, I've asked a nice question. And he went back to his home, thinking all the rest of the day, and all night long he was so excited he couldn't sleep. He was thinking, my spiritual master is going to give me this very special answer to my very special question. Anyway, you get the tension is building. And he went back along the path the next morning. As soon as the sun came up and the heart was pounding expectantly, he's going to give me this answer. And as he was approaching his spiritual master's ashram, he heard his voice calling out, help! Help! Oh no, that's my Guru Maharaj. He's in some difficulty. And he was running down the trail and the brush was hitting his face, but he was just going and going. And he came into the front of the cottage. There was a large tree, and his spiritual master was leaning against the tree with his arms around the tree and his legs around the tree. And, what's wrong? What's wrong? Help! Help! So he started pulling him and pulling and pulling his legs and pulling his arms and pulling his body and putting his foot against the tree and pulling and pulling, and nothing happened. Oh, what should I do? What should I do? Then his spiritual master stood up and said, now do you understand why it's so difficult to make advancement in spiritual life? Because you're holding on so tightly to your expectations of material happiness. You don't make spiritual progress. Asat Krishna. And it's subtle. It's not like somebody hitting you over the head with a baseball bat or something. It's not gross, it's subtle. But attachment to the expectation of finding happiness by the senses coming in contact with sense objects and considering that to be happiness. It's right in Bhagavad Gita also. Krishna indicates that the yehi samsparsha ja bhoga dukha yonaya evate. Samsparsha ja bhoga. The senses contacting sense objects is the place of birth of dukkha. It's the womb in which dukkha is born. Dukkha yonaya evate. Although the promise is enjoyment, but the enjoyment doesn't happen, it becomes unhappiness, dukkha, but it covers one's consciousness. So that even one's hearing Bhagavad Gita, even one's chanting the holy name, even Krishna may be standing before one. We won't recognize, will not have thirst or attraction for Krishna. There's so many scriptural examples. So many. When Jambavan was fighting with Krishna in the cave, Jambavan's Krishna's devotee. He's not just a devotee, he's like a maha devotee. Super elevated devotee. But he didn't even recognize Krishna because he was attached to his family conception and protecting his son. Who are you? You're a thief. Get out of my cave. It's Krishna. And only when he was fighting with Krishna for 30 days and 30 nights straight, he was so powerful, one punch and he killed the lion. 30 days and 30 nights fighting with Krishna with big tree trunks and big boulders and fists, and he was being defeated. Who can defeat me? It must be the Supreme Lord. Oh, you're the Supreme Lord, please forgive me. As long as there's attachment to Maya, to the illusory conception that I can enjoy separately from Krishna, there's not going to be spiritual progress. It's a big obstacle. That's one. One should be enough, but there's not only one. Another one that Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes about, or that Haridas Thakur says, is Hridaya Dorbalyam. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna speaks of Arjuna in that way. My dear Arjuna, you're an Aryan, and this hesitation on your part is not fitting for an Aryan. You know the higher purpose of life. You know what is to be done. Why are you hesitating? How is this petty weakness of heart, Hridaya Dorbalyam, overcome you? It's a subtle covering of our original Krishna consciousness. And what is that Hridaya Dorbalyam? It's something we're all very familiar with, too much familiar with. We know what's to be done, and we don't do it. That's one of the things that I just spent the last two weekends, discussing part of this festival of the Holy Name in Chicago, and then again in Sharanagati. We have a gap between what we know we should be doing and what we're doing. We know. We can recite the scripture, we've read it, we've heard it, and we know, but we don't do it. What's that? Hridaya Dorbalyam. Weakness of heart. We can say someone offered faith. And that's appropriate also, because where there is sufficient faith, there's no hesitation. Even if the odds are completely against you, it's like Mission Impossible. Where there's faith, you just do. Because it's just there where you have faith. So our faith is not sufficiently strong. And so we know what to do. We do some of the things, and we don't do some of the other things, and we do some things halfway, or not fully from our heart. We do them mechanically. Although we know that's not what bhakti is, to do them mechanically. We do them mechanically. We're conditioned souls. We're trying. It's not like shame on me or you or anyone, but it's an obstacle. And we'll speak about overcoming the obstacles, but that's an obstacle. Weakness of heart and subtle internal obstacle. And two should be enough, but there's a third. And the third is offenses. When we make offenses, bhakti goes away from our heart. Bhakti does not enter our heart. Krishna is not pleased. And our capacity to feel strong attraction for Krishna goes away. Krishna becomes Asat Krishna instead of Krishna Krishna due to offenses. And the mind wanders and then it starts contemplating needless things, then it starts contemplating bad things, and then we start doing bad things. The sequence flows from offenses. So, overcoming offenses, know what they are, know what the obstacles on the path of devotion are. Like, you know, if they're between here and the doorway. You know, like you make a little map and there's a pool of water and there's some quicksand and there's a shark in the water and there's a vicious animal, something. Anyway, you know, you navigate, you don't go into the mouth of the vicious animal or jump into the pond with a shark in it or stand and wait to see what happens when you stand in the quicksand. You avoid those things. And stay within the protection of Krishna. You recognize what the anukulyasya sankalpa, pratikulyasya varjanam. Someone volunteered, surrender. So when one wants to enter into the realm of bhakti, there must be surrender. And for surrender, there must be humility. Because without humility, how is there going to be surrender? So this is, now I'm going to go to a second category. The second category is false ego. It's a subtle thing. It's of the eight separated energies, it's the most subtle thing. But it's the most subtle thing that drives all the other things. Just, you know, going to Kapila Dev's teaching to Devahuti. As he begins that chapter, it's 26, Understanding Fundamental Principles of Material Nature, something like that. So at the very beginning, he says, by understanding these, one can have full access to shelter of Krishna, whereby all the material influences are gone. And then he details what those material influences are. But it's the full shelter of Krishna that's needed. But we need to have a proper understanding of what false ego is and what true ego is, and take shelter of true conception of self. So false ego is the first element that separates out from pradhan. Pradhan is the sum total of material ingredients that are not yet differentiated. It's like a big merge warehouse or something. And after Krishna glances upon pradhan, one by one the elements begin separating out. And the first one that separates out
It's false ego. False ego covers the soul, the living entity. And then false ego interacts with the modes of material nature. And false ego in contact with goodness produces the mind. False ego in contact with passion produces material intelligence. False ego in contact with ignorance produces a whole bunch of things. Ignorance has a way of doing that, producing lots of things. The Panchabhuta, the five material elements, and the five working senses, karmendriyas, and the five knowledge-acquiring senses, the gyanendriyas, and the five objects of the senses. The mode of ignorance is very productive, driven, of course, by the mode of passion. So, of all of them, the first to appear and the most subtle is false ego. It's the first to come, it's the last to go. Very tenacious. So, false ego needs to be replaced with a true ego, or the true sense of self. What is that true self? The true self is our true spiritual identity. Gopi Bhartar Pada Kamalayor Dasa Dasa Anudas. We're the servant of the servant of the servant of the personality of Godhead, or the confidential servants of the personality of Godhead. That's our identity. Not aham brahmasmi, we're spirit, but what do spirits do? Just kind of hang out and twinkle? Or what do? We serve. And service is reposed with Krishna, but service is reposed with Krishna through those who are intimately connected to Krishna. So that's the true conception. The antidote, the obstacle of false ego, is addressed by cultivation of true ego, or the true conception of self, and not allowing one to fall prey to the dictates of false ego. False ego has lots of different dresses or garments. They're called upadis, designations. And, you know, someone thinks I am this and someone thinks I am that. And if the this or the that is something other than one's constitutional position of service unto Krishna, that's not who we are. Recently I was hearing a devotee say, I'm the kind of person who, when somebody does da-da-da-da-da-da, I get really angry. That's not who the person is. That's a covering. But they were identifying with that temperament, and that's not who we really are. So many things we are not, and that those identities that we're not, they're false egos. You know, starting with identification with the body, and as ABC elementary as that is, we can't start spelling until we get ABC down. We can't enter deeply into spiritual life while still being held by a false conception of who we are. It happens. I mean, it's pervasive. So, the Bhagavad Gita is there for Arjuna and for us to at least conceptually have the right understanding of who we are. So then there's this gap between what we understand and how we conduct our life. So we have to bridge that gap. Otherwise, it's an obstacle. We're not going to advance as long as we're conceptually saying yes, but practically it's no, or maybe, or I'm not sure. It's not yes. So the cultivation
Rupa Goswami describes bhakti as a sort of cultivation, or that's how Prabhupada presents it in the introduction to Bhagavad Gita. He's just elaborating on anyabhilashatashunyam jnana karma janavratam anukulyena krishna anushilanam. Anushilanam, that word anushilanam, in the introduction to Bhagavad Gita, to Nectar Devotion, Prabhupada uses that word as a sort of cultivation. He says that Rupa Goswami says bhakti is a sort of cultivation. Anushilana. Anu means to follow. And shilana means behavior or conduct. So we follow the path of the perfected souls, those who are attached to Krishna. And we cultivate that. Although we're here, we understand the standard is here. The gap is bridged by, the obstacle is overcome by proper cultivation, following the perfected souls, or following the instructions of Rupa Goswami. When we factually become Rupa Anugas, we're counteracting that subtle misconception of who we aren't, instead of who we are. By practical application, mindful, not just blindly following, but mindful of what that proper conception is and cultivating it, consciously cultivating it. Like this example, the person that said, I'm the kind of person who, when somebody says blah, blah, I get angry. And then I do, you know, such and such. I'm that kind of person. So we check that tendency and instead take shelter of Krishna. Now this is something internal that helps us dealing with something that's external that may be an obstacle. Well, tomorrow is external. Some, how do you deal with external obstacles? It starts with internal. The internal cultivation of Krishna consciousness is essential. Otherwise, you don't have Krishna consciousness. You may have behaviors that are inconsistent, but that's not what Krishna consciousness is. We're not the International Society for Behavior Modification Incorporated. We're the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. And Krishna Consciousness means within one's consciousness you're cultivating, even there may be a gap between what you know and what you do, you're cultivating shelter in Krishna. You're cultivating those qualities, the quality of the soul. That's taking shelter in Krishna, following our perfected acharyas, following Rupa Goswami in particular. It's an internal cultivation can help one overcome even such a tenacious, pernicious thing as false ego. Confirmed. And we'll go back to the other two, and we'll go to one more, and we'll you'll get the idea. We'll go to the next one. The next one is misconceptions. If you don't have the proper conception of goal, you're not going to advance nicely on the path of bhakti. An obstacle on the path of bhakti, it's subtle, but not having proper conceptions. Take some examples. Ninth chapter Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is describing the most confidential knowledge. And in the most confidential knowledge, he first of all describes in a very broad-minded way who are his devotees. And he includes impersonalists, demigod worshippers, and the worshippers of the Virat Rup. They're also my devotees. But then he goes on and explains that actually they're doing so with a wrong understanding. They're doing so with a wrong or incomplete understanding.
the conception is not clear. And with, he spends more time with the worshippers of devatas, that which the devatas deliver is actually coming from me alone. I am the source of everything. I am this, I'm the healing herb, I'm the all the different things that Krishna describes that he is. He everything rests within him in the ninth chapter. He's the source of everything. Everything is within his energy. There's nothing outside of Krishna's energy. But Krishna's outside of that. Because he's the source. Not having that proper conception, when they hear of Krishna descending into human form, they think he's assumed a body, like they have assumed a body. And that the Supreme is impersonal. But, you know, Krishna doesn't complement that understanding. They're avajananti mam mudha manushim tanamashritam param bhavam ajananto. Ajananto, they don't know my higher nature, which is changeless and supreme. So due to a misconception, it's subtle. A conception is something subtle. You have a conception of something. And by a misconception, how are you going to reach the goal? How are you going to progress nicely on the path of bhakti? And just practically speaking, we've all had the experience of either at least being unacquainted with Prabhupada's teachings, or more currently introducing Prabhupada's teachings to people that have not heard them, and we have first-hand experience of how many misconceptions people have. Whoa! The garden variety of misconceptions that people have. And while their intention may be very good, the misconception is going to take them very sincerely in a wrong direction. That happens. It happens. So, not blindly, but very carefully and thoughtfully hearing the message of Bhagavad Gita from proper source and Bhagavatam from proper source, one can receive proper conception of who we are, who God is, what is that process and means of approaching him. It's simple. Then the process is simple. But then there's this gap between what we understand and what we do. But that's okay, provided we stay faithfully. Again, this definition of faith, of bhakti, is carrying forward with faith. Vishwanath Chakravarti, just to support that idea, or that equation of bhakti with faith, faith that's properly proposed is bhakti. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes that of the nine stages of bhakti that Rupa Goswami has given us, do you know what those nine stages are? No, Adav Shraddha, Shraddha, Sadhu Sangha, Bhajana Kriya, you know that? Anartha Nivritti, Nishtha, Ruchi Asakti Bhava Prema. The nine stages of unfolding of bhakti. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, each one of them is but a stage of faith. You could take away those terminologies and use stage of faith terminology and it would be the same. Because in the seed stage there's preliminary faith, in the mature stage it's faith in the form of prema, and in each of the other intermediate stages it's stages of faith. Where the focus upon the personality of Godhead becomes more unobscured or unmixed. So the obstacle is having obscured vision. We're looking at an object, but we don't see it. We're looking in the direction of the object, but we don't see it because
It's obscured. We haven't heard properly from proper sources. So it's necessary to regularly, yes, regularly, Shrinvata Sukata Krishna Punya Shravana Kirtana Satatam Kirtayantoma Nitya Yukta Upasate. So many verses are describing the necessity of, if not always, at least regularly. Regularly. Having very strong regulation. Overcoming internal subtle obstacles of misconception. And, you know, going back sequentially. Colored by false ego and the designations of the varieties of designations of misconceptions. I'm an intelligent person or I'm a dumb person. Anyway, whatever all those other things. They have nothing to do with the soul, those upadis. But so by regularly hearing, that's dismissed. If one has the capacity to be receptive to the message of descending knowledge and regularly exposes oneself to that, the cleansing process takes place. The Bhagavatam is very powerful. I'll share something just from a personal experience. Srimad Bhagavatam is a type of literature because it's not mundane literature, it's transcendental literature. When you regularly hear and study and just absorb yourself in Srimad Bhagavatam, it's no longer out here or in your head, it's in your heart. It starts to affect everything, like, you know, your whole spirit, how you see things, when you interact with something, you process it in terms of the message of Srimad Bhagavatam. It becomes part of you, like a relationship with Krishna, because the Srimad Bhagavatam is Krishna. The whole your picture of the world changes. You feel differently, and you know why. It's just this vibration of Srimad Bhagavatam that's with you, and that's the exact language of Vyasadeva. Shrinvanti, spoken by Narada, Shrinvanti Gayanti Grinanti Sadavaha. That you internalize the message of Scripture. It becomes part of your life, becomes part of your being. And those tendencies for thinking of oneself in terms of upadis and varieties of false ego, it's dispelled. Very, very powerful medicine. Very sweet and natural medicine. Very effective. For everyone of this age, doesn't matter what your dosha is. You don't need to go to an Ayurvedic doctor and tell them you need Srimad Bhagavatam. Everyone should take Srimad Bhagavatam. And then these Asat Trishna. It's surrender unto Krishna means those things that are favorable you accept. There's something favorable to achieving bhakti, real feelings for Krishna. You accept that in principle. At least gradually you cultivate accepting those things. Not just doing, but accepting within your heart as your life. And those things that are unfavorable, you reject them. This asat Krishna naturally fades, but there's also an effort, prayasa, some endeavor to cast away distractions and contaminations and accumulation of temporary things, thinking that's going to be happiness. Consciously discarding those things. Vairagya is natural, but in that spirit of vairagya, they're dismissed. if they're unnecessary. When I travel, sometimes the room where I stay, in places where there are children away at college or something like that, I'm given the room to stay in where their son or their daughter stays. Recently, I was in a place where, you know, the son or the daughter, I won't indicate where, you know, they have this little book where they have, like, you know, their fascinations of what they want. So their dream is they're going to have a BMW and they're going to become a doctor and blah, 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 blah. Another classic is in the young boy who's away to college, on this side is a Bollywood star, over on that side is a red sports car, and over here is their favorite sports athlete. Bollywood, future success and sports. In fact, classic. And over there on the nightstand is a little picture of Ganesh or something. Where on the path of bhakti, those aspirations and shelters and so on, there's one devotee who, like, he, when he got his degree and got his job, and the first thing he did, he's got his little red sports car. And then, you know, he wanted to drive me to go to some program. And he was embarrassed. He said, oh, all the way through high school and college, I was thinking I'd get this thing. And now I got this thing, and now I'm embarrassed. Like Dhruva, you know, thinking of, I wanted this little piece of broken glass, and now I have this precious jewel. How embarrassed I am. So our desires have to be replaced with shelter in Krishna desires. And it's, you know, some of the things come quickly and some of the things don't go so quickly. We hold on. We have to let go. Consciously, willingly let go of those things that we can, not artificially, but things that we can let go. On the strength of nice, strong sadhana, not just artificially. On the strength of nice, strong sadhana, some things will just fall away and some things we discard. And it's not just the things, it's the attachment. It's the expectation that that's going to bring happiness, which it doesn't. I was visiting the home of one South Indian man, very, very, very nice Vaishnav. And he was taking me somewhere, and we sat down in his new Mercedes. And I sat down in the seat and said, is this leather? He said, you're Sri Vaishnava, a very, very, very pukka man. He said, I think so. I said, you know, when you buy the car, you know so. What is it? He said, it's leather. You know, I said, how could you do this? Because of I had a relationship with the man, I could speak this way. How could you do this? Buy a Mercedes. Well, they don't make them with the other stuff, vinyl. They only make them with leather. So don't buy a Mercedes. How can you do that? You do your puja so nicely every morning and buy a cowhide car. How can you do that? Next time he visited, he didn't have the Mercedes. But, you know, luxury cars, that's part of the package. But, you know, where do you draw the line of what do you want? What is that value that you are cultivating throughout the course of your life? On this side is birth, and on that side is death, and in between is the path of life. And what goes in that path of life? What is our value? And the path of bhakti says you let go of those things and you accept that which is going to, is favorable for reaching Krishna. And selectively, as those choices are made and the other choices are no thank you, it helps the attachment for Krishna, detachment for matter, and progressing internally on the path of bhakti. So that when you chant Krishna's holy name, or you're worshipping the deity form of the Lord, or hearing the sacred scriptures, or serving the devotees, you feel something. The joy of transcendental reciprocation with Krishna through the medium of those loving exchanges with Krishna and his devotees. And that joy is so strong, progress becomes much more rapid and sustainable and durable, enduring, despite all whatever external obstacles may come your way. So we'll speak some more about the external obstacles tomorrow. But it's resting upon the internal cultivation of Krishna consciousness. Okay. So any questions or comments from anyone? There's one behind you.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, thank you for the wonderful lecture. Maharaj, you mentioned about the story about the disciple and guru, how he asked that question. I get into those situations too, where when I ask a question, I'm struggling where I want to be humble in the way I ask. I want to say that I'm really struggling, but part of me, which is the bad dog, tells me that, oh, you're asking a very wonderful question. See, everyone are going to think you're a good devotee. I'm struggling a lot in situations like that, where it's part of me is saying that's not the way you have to be. Part of me is trying to pull me. Sometimes the bad dog takes over the other part of me.
The bad thought, you're saying?
Yeah, the bad thoughts. Yeah, I'm
struggling. Takes over the good thought.
Yes.
And so your question is?
I recognize it, but I'm struggling to overcome. I mean, if I work a little bit, give more time, I overcome it, but instantly the thoughts, it's like both the thoughts are bombarding each other. And it's a struggle for quite a time with those thoughts, both the good and bad, and it's like a lot of struggle inside.
What does Krishna say about that kind of thing? What does Krishna say? Can you think of a verse from Bhagavad Gita? Daivihi esha gunamayi. You know the verse? Mama maya doradhyaya mam eva ye papadyante mayam etam tarantite. This material nature is very difficult to overcome. You can struggle, duratyaya, very hard struggle against material nature, and often material nature wins. But what's the choice of preference that Krishna gives? Surrender unto him. Mam evaye prapadyante. Mayam etam tarantite. One can easily cross beyond, not just win the struggle, but cross completely beyond the whole ocean of struggle. Just like that. Struggle's over. You're on the other side. How? Surrender unto Krishna. So when you're the good thought, bad thought scene comes, it's good, first of all, it's good that you're recognizing there's a bad thought. Recognition is, that's an essential beginning. And then regret.
I wish, you know, due to so much unwholesome previous association with the modes of material nature, there's this bad thought. Some regret. Then rectify the situation. Take shelter of Krishna. Whether out loud or from within your heart, you call out, Krishna! Please accept me. Please pick me up. Please engage me in your service. And the bad thought, you neglect it. What happens when you continue to ponder on the bad thought? It gets more tenacious and bigger and starts overcoming, and that's all you can think about is the bad thought. So withdraw consciousness from asat and place consciousness in sat by surrender unto Krishna. Nasato vidite bhavo na bhavo vijite sataha. The tattvadarshis, the learned persons, don't place much value in asat. And what is that bad thought? It's asat. You go for a walk, you get some dirt on your shoes. You put your shoes by the door and it leaves a big pile of dust or mud or something. You get a broom and you sweep it. You don't ponder over, oh, my shoes got all muddy and dirty. And I left some by the doorstep. Just get a broom and clean it and go on. Asat and sat. And take shelter in sat. Take shelter in devotional activity for the pleasure of Krishna. And do the cleaning for the pleasure of Krishna too. Just discard the bad thought. And move on.
In the process of surrendering, there's some amount of faith required. And that is one other aspect I struggle with. I have the faith, but it's not spontaneous.
Okay, then practice. Practice. Like anything. That's not spontaneous. You practice. Do you drive a car? When you first were learning how to drive a car, was it spontaneous? Some practice, right? Maybe even some bumps along the way when you were practicing. But practice and that's just a motor skill. This is something that's of the soul. Shelter in Krishna is of the soul. It's completely natural. The other is not. So practice. With the confidence, again, that it's not something that you're bringing from the outside inside, like, you know, some artificial something. Prabhupada speaks of it as the art. This chanting is not an artificial imposition upon the mind, but is natural for the soul. So, devotional service unto Krishna is natural for the soul. And the other, the bad thought program, that's not natural for the soul. And it's asat, treat it accordingly. Anything else? There are nine steps. There are stages, yeah, okay.
Nine stages. So is it that once you reach a higher stage, is it possible to regress, or do you always keep progressing?
It's possible to regress up to a certain point, and then one doesn't regress. At the bhava stage, one doesn't regress.
Okay.
Generally.
Okay.
There's one unique exception. That's the position of Bharat Maharaj. It's specifically detailed in the purports of our acharyas that he reached such an elevated stage, but then his spiritual practices slackened as he became attached to the deer, to the point where at the time of death he was thinking of a deer and he became a deer. So that's a regression. But because of his elevated state, he was given remembrance, even in the body of the deer, of his previous life as Bharat Maharaj, and the next life as Jad Bharat, as Bharat Maharaj who had made this mistake. So that's an exception. The rule is, at that elevated stage, there, one continues. It's like, here's a description of stage number 6. Shraddha, Sadhusanga, Bhajana Kriya, Anartha Nivritti, Nishtha. Nishtha is firm faith, where Nashta Prayeshu, Abhadreshu, Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. So that's a verse from Bhagavatam, where in that Nishtha stage, the Abhadras are almost eradicated. Prayeshu, almost complete. But there's still something there. But that something is of a diminutive proportion, and the bhakti is so strong that even if some of the diminutive portion starts to become aggravated, it will be overwhelmed by the bhakti, generally speaking. And then ruchi, taste, asakti, attachment, bhava, spontaneous ecstasy, prema. So from that nishtha stage on, generally it continues. But it's possible, it's certainly possible that at the stage of almost gone, then one can try to become infatuated with the distinction and the honor and the praise that come to one who has achieved that, and try to become an enjoyer.
So there are new distractions along the way.
It's the tendency to be an enjoyer of matter carries over to be an enjoyer of little successes in spiritual life. The Sanskrit phrase is taranga rangani. Ranga means waves, and rangani is small waves. Tries to be the enjoyer of the little spiritual successes that one may experience by Krishna's mercy. Trying to be the enjoyer of that which is Krishna's. Tendency may still remain. But generally speaking, if one is careful, one continues. And in the bhava stage, the ecstasy is spontaneous, like Mataji was saying. I'm not on that spontaneous, but so stage. But when it's spontaneous, it just dispels spontaneously. There's no room for anything else, because that sense of fullness is so full. You'd like to get to that stage where there's no regressing?
I would, yes.
Me too.
I guess that's a desire.
Yeah. So we cultivate. When we have a clear sense of goal and what also a means of achieving it, then we can apply ourselves very carefully and thoughtfully. But we must know the right means. We must have a clear sense of what the goal is. Anything else?
Maharaj, we talked about faith. How to increase one's faith in Krishna?
How does one get warm?
Being by the fire. Or
yeah, by something that's... Come close to something that's warm and you get warm. So, how to increase one's faith in Krishna? By association with those that have faith in Krishna. It strengthens your faith in Krishna. But you knew that.
Yes, Lord. The faith is there, at the same time there's a troubling aspect of uncertainty of how Krishna will handle the situation.
But that's up to Krishna. If you have, you know, like, do you within reason, not like absolutely, but within reason, do you trust that you'll handle yourself with your child and, you know, in a respectful and proper way? Those that are placing themselves as your dependent, you're giving attention to them because they're your dependent.
That's right.
No, because you're a fallible being and recognize it, I may not always know what to do each circumstance, but caring is there in any case. So in Krishna, he's infallible, and you place yourself in his care. Give yourself some credit. What about Krishna? So what's that hesitation is a category of faithlessness. Or, I know what to do but I'm not doing it. And Krishna doesn't make boo-boos, we do. Well, Krishna tried but just like didn't get it together. You know, he really didn't know how to handle my situation. So what can I do? He's only Krishna. It's not like that. He is achyuta, infallible. But that's a matter of faith. So how does one's faith grow? Through association of those that have faith. And read the wonderful lives, about the wonderful lives of great souls, and hear their outpourings of their heart and connect. That's also association by hearing. Certainly very powerful when you have direct physical association with such persons. But one can associate with such person just by hearing. Read Lilamrita. And then read it again. You know, the life of Srila Prabhupada is such a powerful, compelling example of one who had implicit faith. He had no reason to do, you know, a sensible person wouldn't have done what he did. Sumati Maharaji has said, Swamiji, your age. You can't ride that ocean liner across the Atlantic Ocean. You'll die. The order of my spiritual master. Better I die in carrying out the order of my spiritual master. She saw he was so determined, with such faith in carrying out. So, you read Lilamrita and you get a sense of what real faith is. And it's inspiring. It's standing by the fire. And those devotees that are, they may even be very simple devotees. We're not in a high position somewhere, but those that have full faith in the instructions that they have received, the teachings of our disciplic succession, that's powerful. Associate with such persons, even through their writings or their recordings or something. Someone else?
I just wanted to ask that, you know, they say you should remember Krishna with every breath, like all the time. And how do you do that when you're working or when you're under pressure, you're under stress, and you get carried away by everything else that's tugging at you?
The answer is really easy. By attachment. A young boy and a young girl have romance. They don't have to ask that question. How do I always think of him? How do I always think of her? even at work, or even in the classroom, or even when I'm on the sports field, or taking my exam, or brushing my teeth, or eating, or doing anything. He's thinking of her, and she's thinking of him. By attachment, by affection. Prabhupada used to give this example. I heard it several times. Sometimes parents will keep the little baby shoes. It used to be a thing in America. They would hang it, little baby shoes, from their mirror in their car. Now it's CDs and other things, and, you know, air fresheners and other unmentionables. But it used to be a thing. And when Prabhupada's comment was, when they see the shoes, they don't just see the shoes. They see their child because of the feelings of attachment. Then even just something that reminds you of Krishna, when you think of Krishna. And what is there that's not in relation to Krishna? When there's attachment to Krishna, wherever you look, that's advanced. But that's how. To always think of Krishna in all circumstances of life. By that stage. So back to these stages of bhakti, that's the asakti. That's very advanced. Attachment. Prior to attachment is taste. Prior to taste is firm faith. Prior to firm faith is eradication of these subtle things in the heart that we've been speaking about this evening. When that stage comes, you're sitting in your office thinking of Krishna. You're not like spacing out because you can't do your work because you're thinking of Krishna. You're thinking, you're doing your work, whatever it is that you're doing and not doing, it's because it's for Krishna. Yes. But something that can help us is the love and the loving relationships that we may have with those that have love for Krishna. This association factor. I'll share something. There are certain youth, teenagers, that out of their spontaneous desire, they're writing to me. They're sending little reports. And from time to time, I get from them a description of things they don't even share with their parents, of challenges that they're going through with peer pressure. So I won't detail it, but one recently came to my attention where they were about to do something that was like very embarrassing to even to tell about. But the thing that checked them was, I couldn't do this, thinking, you know, how can I betray the relationships of loving care that have been given to me? I couldn't do it. I told them, I can't do this. They said, oh, you're a sissy, and, you know, get out of here, and, you know, trash on you, and they won't talk to me now. I lost my peer association, but I couldn't. So there's protection from loving relationships. And the positive, one, you know, even in trying situations, one can take shelter of those loving relationships and think of Krishna through those loving relationships. So for us, attachment to Krishna may be far, but attachment to those who are attached to Krishna may be more close. So Krishna sends us such persons in our lives to help us become attached to Him. It's ingenious. It's brilliant. But it's the spiritual world descending into our lives in a quantity that we can digest. We can imbibe and, like, internalize loving relationships with Krishna's devotees. That's an extension of loving relationship with Krishna. And then when that loving relationship is there, you always think of Krishna. He's drawing us to Him in that way, or descending into our lives in that way, like osmosis. You're like getting little titrations of Krishna. So in ways that, you know, degrees that we can handle, so that we become attached to Him and always think of Him. Something else in the back?
Maharaj, thank you so much for your association. The question I have is, you talked about holding on to misconceptions.
You talked, like, about what?
We are holding on to the misconceptions.
Okay.
The question is, like, how do I know what misconceptions I am holding on to, and without knowing that, how to, you know, get over them?
First part is, how do I know what misconceptions I'm holding on to? And the second part is?
My concern is, like, without knowing that, how do I get over it?
How do I get over it? Sounds like a repeat of the first question.
Yeah, somewhat.
How do I understand what misconceptions they are? And once I understand what they are, how do I get rid of them?
Yes.
Prabhupada has described the process of self-realization, which is the answer, you know, what you're speaking about, to be gradual. Gradual, like the rising of the sun in the morning. It's dark, you know, gradually. Then there's a little light in the firmament. Then it's twilight. And then, boop, the sun comes over the horizon. But it's not intense like when the sun is fully, or has fully arisen. And then it's like, anyway, so in gradations. The answer to your question is gradually. Those, as the light of Krishna arises, the details of things will be seen. The Bhagavatam uses the language of the pots and plates. One can see objects, one can see things, we can see reality, one can see even subtle reality of misconceptions, proper conceptions, through the illumination of Krishna, Krishna's presence. So it's safe to take it for granted that practically all of our conceptions are somewhat distorted or less than transparent. But the process of bhakti, if one has faith in the process of bhakti and follows it, then those misconceptions will gradually become disclosed, like light discloses pots and plates. regular hearing, one will come to understand how I have misconception. I had a misconception of this or that. Let me ask it, answer your question differently with a question. Have you read Bhagavad Gita more than once?
No, no, Maharaj.
Have you read sections of Bhagavad Gita more than once?
Yes.
And when you go back and read that section of Bhagavad Gita the second time or third time, do you find things the second time or the third time that you didn't even notice were there the first time?
Yes, Maharaj.
How did that happen? And the answer that you would give is the answer to your question. Krishna reveals things gradually, or the light of the illumination of transcendental knowledge, shining darkness into a dark place, illumines what's in that dark place, the misconceptions. Otherwise, someone, just like you may be giving a class in Bhagavad Gita to someone that's not read Bhagavad Gita at all, and you're pointing a laser pointer on something, and they go, I don't see it. It's right there. I don't see it. And let them undergo the process of devotional service a little bit more, and that is, oh, I see it. Gradual. Through the purification that comes from properly taking up the process of bhakti. Utsaha, nischaya, dhairya, so on. Okay. Okay, so I think we'll end. Yes? Okay, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaur Premanandi Hari Go.